With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd, and this is the Chuck Toddcast. So, 6 months after he left office, we continue to see examples of Republicans tying themselves to former President Trump, often at their own political expense. From their resistance to join the January 6th committee, to the embrace of long shot candidates who then lose elections, which we saw in the Texas 6th special election, the GOP continues to hold Trump close, despite the reality of what Trump produces. My colleague Mark Murray and I wrote today in First Read, Republican leaders have tried different ways to deal with the former president. They've appeased him, traveling to Mar-a-Lago or Bedminster to break bread with him. They've tried to sidestep questions about him. They've warned about what might happen to the party if they lose Trump's base of voters. But one thing they still haven't tried is to marginalize him. So joining me today, Mr. Hardball himself, Chris Matthews. He's also author of a new book, This Country, My Life in Politics and History. Chris, welcome to the Toddcast. And just when we were sort of in our podcast green room, you were still sort of reacting to the powerful opening of the January 6th committee and those cops. And by the way, a reminder to folks, you were a Capitol Police officer for a period of time. We always think that one of these testimonials and one of these hearings is going to be the big turning point. I think none of us know what the turning point is going to look like until after the fact. But why do you think yesterday was so impactful?
Well, I think the Democrats handled it very well, the chair of the committee and the members and the Republican members, because they let the officers be the star of the day. And those four police officers of the Capitol Police were excellent in their understanding of values. They understood it was about democracy. It wasn't industrial site that was overrun. It was the citadel of our democracy. As one guy said, the beloved center of our democracy. And I think they understood the stakes. It's about an election which was held, and it was to be certified January 6th, a formality. And there were people that came to the Capitol under the inspiration of a former president or a current president at that point to prevent that from happening. And the big lie, of course, wasn't just that was the wrong thing to do in terms of patriotism. It was the idiotic belief that if they could disrupt events that day and prevent the vice president from certifying the results of the Electoral College, that would somehow change the results of the election. It takes incredible imagination to think what made a person, any of those people, think that all you had to do was disrupt the events and somehow Trump would get 4 more years as president. I don't know how they thought that through, that we weren't going to recover and have another ritual of ratification. Anyway, I blame it on the president, the former president. I think he told those people something that's not true, morally and patriotically wrong, but essentially dishonest. They were not going to change history.
Why do you think these Republican elected leaders, who all know, I mean, look, they're all treating Trump, realizing they're treating him, they really are treating him with trepidation. You know, we'll sit here and say, oh, they look like they're, you know, I think it is, if you put Kevin McCarthy at a lie detector, He's going down, he's sucking up to Trump out of his own necessity. He's not doing it because he thinks it's the right thing to do. What I just don't get is there's plenty of evidence scattered all over the country in elections all over the place that Trump's more of a paper tiger than they realize. Yet they're in the grips of this grifter. Why won't they collectively throw this guy off the cliff? It's one of those that if they all acted in concert, this would be over. Trump would be marginalized. It'd be a painful few months, but it would be over.
You know, I was reading a while back about the early 50s in Massachusetts, and it's hard for us to believe this, but John F. Kennedy as a young senator was a nothing compared to Joe McCarthy. That Joe McCarthy could have ruined Jack Kennedy's career, and he knew it, and he wouldn't vote to censure him. He made a point of not even sending in his intention to vote to censure because he was afraid that would kill him in Massachusetts. I think history is going to show that Trump was more powerful than McCarthy, more powerful than even Mitch, that they're all afraid of him. And they're afraid because they're going to lose their seats. Really, the only stakes are that you'll lose your seat. I mean, that's all that Trump can do to a person. He can put you in jail. He can't make you infamous. You'll still be thought well of by your friends and by your supporters. He can't make you into a villain. He can simply take away your seat. And that's enough for these guys. If you ever read Profiles in Courage, again, to reference Kennedy, these guys really like their jobs. It's interesting work. There's a lot of prestige to it. It makes them important people. They have the habit of importance, as Peggy Noonan used that phrase recently. They don't want to lose that habit of importance. That's really what's at stake here. These guys are afraid to be removed from what they consider reality, which is political life. And it's all true, because I think Trump can get rid of them. I don't think that's a delusion. I think he's proven his ability to knock people off.
And, well, he can if he focuses on them like laser-like.
Yeah, right. But he
doesn't have that much power. I do think they give him a lot more power than he actually has.
Well, maybe he can make DeSantis the nominee next time. Maybe he can do that. Maybe he can make Nikki Haley the number two, the VP candidate. Maybe he can build, like, be an all-time kingmaker. Maybe he still wants to do that and can do that. Create the ticket for 2024.
Do you think he knows how to be? Do you think he knows how to be the producer of a Broadway show without being the star of his own Broadway show?
I noticed how you lowered your voice for that, because you're very confident. You're right. The guy has no track record of building up somebody else's ego. It's his own ego that he feeds. I think you're right, but he may be too. Let's be honest about it, too overweight. The man does not look healthy. That's not my business. I'm not a doctor.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't look right. Running for president next.
Got to stop eating cheeseburgers. When I hear the phrase "student of history," you are one who really, I think, embraces that phrase. So historically, you brought up the 50s, and you just automatically, and it was a given that you were talking about the 1950s, obviously with McCarthy. But right. I'm curious. Which decade of the 50s are we truly reliving? The 1850s or the 1950s?
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, about the 1950s, which I did live through as a kid. And I have to tell you, I have that thing on you. All I have on you, Chuck, is the 50s. When
you're
I
right.
lived through the 50s. And Dwight D. Eisenhower became president. He was president of the country. Now, the intellectuals put him down, but he was the president of the country in the tradition of FDR and great presidents. He's one of the top... most recently judged to be one of the five greatest presidents. Well, you could feel that, because even if you didn't like the guy, he was, and people did like him. You couldn't imagine.
But it was because he was General Eisenhower. He was a warrior.
Well, He received the Nazi surrender. He came back. He saw what the Germans had done with their roads, and he built the interstate highway system based on defense, based upon what he'd seen over there. And he could do things like build the interstate highway system. People would trust him to spend the money properly. He had tremendous prestige. You couldn't imagine a mob going through the U.S. Capitol when he was president, or when JFK was president, or Ronald Reagan.
But, all right, you say all that, and yet what did the 1950s give us? He was this incredible rock, but when you lifted under the rock, you had Joe McCarthy and Richard Nixon.
Well, we had Jack Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson coming in after him. There was a sense of, first of all, peace and prosperity was real. We created the American middle class during the 50s, thanks to FDR and the GI Bill, yes, and public and veterans housing and things like that. But clearly there was no wars. The great thing about Ike was he had resistance. We didn't go into Lebanon. We didn't go into Indochina. And, you know, a lot of times we could have done things we didn't do, which we really took the restraint of a guy who had defeated Hitler. The 50s, what I worry about is the 1850s. That reference is scary, because over the National Archives, there's a wonderful phrase, the past is prologue. Well, you have to ask, what's today a prologue to? And if you look at the events of this year, the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol, General Michael Flynn talking about supporting a military coup, 3 in 10 Republicans, self-identified Republicans, saying this president, the past president, Donald Trump, will be reinstated August 1st. They believe that, according to polling. What is all that a prologue to? People are being misled. They're believing in it, basically an insurrection, military coups, things like that, reinstatements of a president defeated in an election. We have the conditions now for it to get worse. And I'm not worried about democracy. We'll have election in 22 and 24. But I do worry about the trend. Are we really making – are we as sturdy in our commitment to democracy as what we were sturdy in the 50s? Are we that sturdy? Or would, do some people want white rule? To be blunt about it, would they prefer white rule to democracy? And certainly there was evidence on January 6th, and we learned that testimony yesterday, of all the N-word usage to the face of men in uniform. It's, to me, unbelievable. Well, it isn't unbelievable. It's believable today that there are people that are that racist and that committed to basically white supremacy that they're willing to attack a man in uniform, serving his country and saving his constitution. And they're saying he's the outgot. He shouldn't be here. He shouldn't be a citizen. What are they talking about? That's the way they're behaving. So I do worry about democracy in the long run. And that's what this is more like the 50s heading towards real trouble. Than the 1950s.
I'm going to pause it there. We'll be right back after a quick break. This is the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
You know, it's interesting. I just finished the Chernow's book on Grant.
Wow.
It's tremendous. It's really good. But it also is haunting for me because it just, there was a lot of stuff that is ringing very familiar today in all of this. But one difference, and it strikes me as the vulnerability we really have now. So one of the concerns the Union obviously had during the Civil War, you know, the French were down in Mexico. The French were kind of helping the Confederates a little bit. There was always concern that there were going to be outside forces trying to sort of take advantage of the Civil War. It was much harder to do that in the mid 19th century to actually assist one side or over the other by a foreign power. It is not that way now, and I guess the real test of where we really are as a country is going to come when some world power basically tries to test us. And how are we going to react? How are we going to respond?
The Russians were on the side of the Union back in the 1860s, but they're clearly not on the side of our Union today. It's clearly they're not on our side. They want disruption. They've become a ticked off country rather than a great power. They're happier. I thought Joe Biden was making a reasonable effort to try to tell Putin, look, I'm going to treat you as another great power if you stop messing around. But if you just mess around, I'm going to treat you as just a troublemaker, a little pain in the butt country, not worthy of our attention as world leaders. The French, well, treat them with respect, and the Germans and the Brits. But we're not going to treat you with respect if you continue to behave with cyber war and things like that. Why don't you choose the status that we can help bring you back to as a great power rather than just being the troublemaking power? But you look at the face of Putin. Does he have the class to want to be a great power? Simply just wants to ruin our great power role. I mean, it seems like he
just feels like a mobster. I don't mean to be stereotypical here, but he just feels like a head of a mob that enjoys being the head of a mob.
You mean like the kind of guy that likes to ride around on a horse without his shirt on?
Yeah. I mean, you know, but that's what he strikes me as, that he has no grand. I mean, the good news is that unlike a Hitler, he doesn't have a grand ambition other than self-aggrandizement.
Well, unfortunately, like a lot of leaders, like Netanyahu, like Trump, they just want to stay in office.
Yeah.
That's all they want. John Kerry once said to me, Netanyahu, All he wants was to stay in office. And whatever coalition he could cook up. And Trump's like that. He would play either side of any issue, the whole power. That's the sad thing about the Republican Party, which for years you and I grew up with, a party that had real commitments to smaller government, less taxation, strong defense, self-reliance, a little bit of libertarianism thrown in.
By the way, it was also the party of the college educated. The most interesting transition, I think, in your lifetime in politics, you talked about Eisenhower, and you know he was the, you know, look, I was raised by, you know, my father used to say the Democrats have good ideas, but the Republicans ought to be the ones managing them.
Thank you. You're so smart.
That was how I was raised. Well, you know, he'd say, "Oh, the liberal do-gooders, that's nice, but you got to have a steady hand." But guess what? Today's steady hand is not inside the Republican Party.
No, that's so true. Because when I go back to the interstate highway system, now, if you do any summer traveling this year, you're going to Route 80, Route 70, Route 95, 93. You know all the big interstates, and they change life. Instead of little county speed traps, you get to really get there fast. Fantastic stuff.
You still have some county speed traps. Trust me. On I-85, I've gotten caught. But anyway, but I digress.
The Republicans, as your dad said, are very good at efficiency and getting things done. So you would trust them to build the project, but they don't want to do it. The Democrats want to do it, but you don't want to trust them to really do it. They want to do set-asides and Davis-Bacon and everything. They got all kinds of ways to divert the money to good causes, but not necessarily get the job done well. Republicans are good at efficiency. Democrats are good at values, but they don't get together. The Democrats are saying we need infrastructure, but they don't talk about actual bridges and hard stuff to do. They talk about how much money we're going to spend and an abstraction. I've never seen a party so out of it. You don't sell a car to somebody without showing them the car. You tell them what the mileage is on. You tell them something good on the resale.
Yeah,
you
know, but what's the car? They tell me how it rides.
The Democrats just say, let's spend the money. Let's spend the money. Everything's going to be great. And the Republicans say, yeah, let's talk about the price tag. So they get hung up on the price tag because it's back when I was with Tip, and I'm bragging here, I got the list of all the bridges in Peoria, the Republican leader's hometown, that were below safety standards. And Tip went out on the floor of the House and read those names and addresses of those dangerous bridges. That's how you play it. You bring it home to the other guy or woman, and you tell them, if you don't fix these bridges, the school buses are going over there at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Do you want that on your head? This is how you play politics. The Democrats sit around saying, why don't we spend $3 trillion? What? That's all they say. Let's spend $3 trillion.
How do we know that's the price tag? You know, why don't you tell me how many bridges we're going to build? Tell me how many roads we're going to do.
How about the Brent Spence Bridge between Kentucky and Ohio? Why don't we fix that bridge? Apparently, it's quite rickety. At least Biden did talk about that the other day. But bring it home to the other side. Defense, we spend money on defense because we have real fears, the bear in the woods, the Russians, the Chinese, whatever, the terrorists. There's usually a pretty good argument made that we need a strong defense. But the Democrats, for some reason, don't go back to the New Deal stuff of actually showing us the dam you're going to build. You know, tell us the electrical system you're going to, the rural electrification you're going to set up out in the boonies. People have electricity for the first time, or they're going to have high Wi-Fi for the first time or whatever. I mean, tell them what you're going to give them and scare the Republicans. They're going to deny it to them. Don't just talk in abstractions. And unfortunately, as this week proceeds, they haven't gotten that tough yet. They have not played hardball with the recalcitrant five Republican senators who I still doubt may not be out there. I think that we may only end up with 55, 58 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do think, and you tell me, but I do think the Democrats are – you know, I have this theory: the party's become too big, that it's trying to be too many things for too many constituencies. Because right now, there's such an opportunity to be the anti-Trump party, but I don't know if there's a tent big enough to actually make a political party out of that.
Well, are we the party? I should say we. I've been pretty much inactive in politics for years, but I'll just say I tend to vote Democrat. And I'll say this: what is the Democratic Party today? Is it the new mayor of New York, or is it AOC? Is it defund the police or put an ex-cop in there? I think it's in numbers, clearly it's put the ex-cop in there. We need law enforcement, especially in tough neighborhoods. We need, when we dial 911, we want a strong, courageous, dutiful police officer to show up. We don't want somebody, another officer showing up hesitant to do his or her duty, is scared they're going to get in trouble, would rather get to the end of their shift and go home. We don't want that kind of police officer. We want an aggressive, again, courageous policeman to show up when we get in trouble. There's something going on, even domestic relations, whatever it is. Everybody will say yes to that in a tough neighborhood. You'd have to be in a pretty safe neighborhood to say, I don't care about 911. And yet this conversation, thanks to Pelosi and Jim Clyburn, however, they're going out and they're trying to correct this and make sure nobody thinks the Democratic Party's for defund the police. But I'm not sure they'll succeed by next November.
I'm not sure either.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Black Lives was successful. Black Lives was successful and should be. Defund the police is a dangerous proposition.
Yeah, it is. There is when something is wrong at your house, everybody wants 911 to work in their favor. Yeah.
That's right.
Right? Everybody does. Chris, before I let you go, I want to say, you know, look, nobody gets to one of the things I've learned in this business is nobody gets to decide. Sometimes it's not in your own hands when somebody decides in television that your time is up. But the thing that I admire about how you handled your situation is you didn't make excuses. You just said you were wrong and you've learned from it and you're going to continue to learn from it. I just think it set a pretty good example. I'm sure this wasn't easy and hasn't been an easy time, but you seem like a man at peace.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Why should I add to what you said? It was nice what you said. So it's true. It's all true, but thank you.
Well, I was just going to say in some ways, you know, you're somebody who you had four or five paths you could have picked. You could have been in an elective office. You could have been an historian, and you do what you did. And you know, you're sort of a piece of all of it. I really enjoy Chris Matthews, the historian. So, are you going to keep this up?
I've been looking at a lot of subjects, and of course, I'm a Churchill fanatic, and I do think there's something about courageous leaders in history as people that we look up to. Not necessarily for the details, but for the basic moral rightness of their behavior. And so I'm still looking for heroes. My most successful books have been about basically Bobby Kennedy. Still, when I walk around, you know, anywhere I go, I usually bump into somebody who said, I love that Bobby Kennedy book of yours. And I think people are still...
Do you think you've created a character? Do you think... And I say this to all Bobby Kennedy sycophants, and I mean this I understand it. I feel like Bobby Kennedy's an amazing role. People place a lot of – there's a lot of successful presidential initiatives that a President Bobby Kennedy that people swear would have happened. Like,
yeah, I know.
Do you think we've created a myth that he could have never lived up to if he lived?
I don't know. I don't know whether he would have won in 68. But I'll tell you this, which I discovered as a Capitol policeman back 50 years ago. Hard to believe. I was standing near the, you know, where the subway coming from the Senate offices leads into the Capitol, and there's an escalator there going up to the Capitol inside. You know that area? Well,
yeah.
I was standing there in the nighttime, and there's hardly anybody around, talking to a building engineer, the guy at the super, the kind of guy that fixes things in the middle of the night. And we're chatting about politics and senators and how they really are. And he said, you know, of all the liberal Democratic senators, to broaden it, the only one that made a point of saying hello to the Capitol policeman he passed was Bobby Kennedy, and he used to watch him do it. The others were too snooty, you know, the Ribicoffs, the Fulbrights, all these highbrow intellectual greatness. You know, they walk with a senatorial walk even. They had sort of a sense of themselves as personages. Well, Bobby liked the cops. He knew who they were. He was a prosecutor. They named the Justice Department after him. He was on the side of law and order, but he was a liberal too. He cared about people with their needs and people born with disadvantages. And yet he was for doing the right thing, and he was tough about it. That's, I think, the kind of Democrat or anybody we should have today. Someone who understood the law and believed its importance, but also had...
It's always a pleasure. And until we speak again, good to talk to you.
Thanks. And I think Bobby still stands pretty tall. In that regard, I think still when he gave that speech in Indianapolis the night Dr. King was killed.
No, yeah, it is. It's a shining moment.
When he's a white guy, walks in there, the cops wouldn't come in with him. And he stood there and talked about compassion and love. And that took nerve. And I think, I stand with him. And I think nobody's perfect. I think we need, anyway, I want to get back to the future. And that is, I do want to write about heroes. And I think I might have found one.
Look, I hear you. After I read through this Grant book and with Lincoln and just reminded that you're right, there's something about extraordinary leaders are amazingly ordinary.
Grant was a drunk, and he was also a guy who believed in the cause of the Civil War. It wasn't just a military
enemy. He understood, but being a drunk, and what I loved what Chernow did, by the way, with alcoholism, is that he also understood, I guess the way to look at it is he understood weakness, and he understood that men had weakness, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but it also made him seem ordinary.
Washington and Hamilton, that guy turns him out.
Yeah, no, he does.
Turns him out. I don't know how he does.
He does. Well, it's a full-time job. That's why he doesn't do other. He doesn't do 7,000 other things.
I'm a professor over at Fulbright University, Vietnam, which has been an amazing opportunity for me.
I got to speak to your class, and I have to tell you that just seems like a blast. And I hope you get to do it in person at some point.
We will. Early next year, I'll be over there, over in Ho Chi Minh City. Who would have believed how history changes? And we have a new ally, Vietnam. We both have a common threat facing us, China.
Yeah, it's called China. Yeah. Well, allies of convenience sometimes.
Well, you're my ally.
Mr. Matthews.
You heard it loud and clear. You're my ally. Thank you.
I'm with you there, my friend. It's always a pleasure, and until we speak again.
You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Justice Green and Matt Rivera. John Reese is our executive producer, and our theme music composed by Spoke Media. You can catch Meet the Press daily on MSNBC every day at 1. Meet the Press Reports is on demand on Peacock, and the big show is every Sunday morning on any platform you want. Thanks for listening, and until we upload again.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.